I like the pick, Ben, because it sounds like a model of car.
Yeah, the 2019 Bryce Durang finally comes with all-wheel drive, which was really the last thing that was holding it back. And now that they that feature is available, I think it's going to compete with some of the German models for sure.
Yeah, and I like that they offer it in a sports mode.
Obviously. Yeah, that's you know, they were a little behind on that, and the infotainment. Episode 113 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus daily podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayre, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Gentlemen, it's nice to have the band back together tonight.
It is. It's very nice to have the band back together. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm just happy to be in a band.
I am thoroughly enjoying Woj just trolling the NBA and ESPN at the same time. Because tonight is, we're recording the night of the NBA draft. And even though he was instructed not to reveal what the picks were going to be ahead of time, he's basically just got a thesaurus open and is strongly alluding to who each team will take immediately before that team takes the player. So pretty big fan of that.
I think it's impressive how he every time he's like, they're zeroing in, and he's right every time. It's amazing.
Oh, this was so premeditated. Like, that's the best part. Like, they told him he couldn't do this, and he's been planning all these, like, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's a very strong move.
It is. So from one sports draft to another, we are going to do our annual post-MLB draft dynasty drafts tonight. Now that we know where a bunch of the top incoming prospects have landed in terms of organization, it's easier for us to give a rough breakdown of how we view their fantasy value within the larger context of the dynasty world as we know it. So we're going to talk about that tonight. We're going to break down what this looked like last year for us, which is better for some of us than others. And then we'll take a quick break and hit you with Madden or Mad Online before sending you on your way. So, Brett, I know this is a difficult episode for you because Craig and I tend to know a lot more about drafted prospects than you do. That being said, do you want to give us a general sense of, you know, the relative strength or weakness of this class compared to some of the most recent ones?
Sure. You know, the strength of the class is basically in the depth of talent. I mean, there are a couple of pockets of strength also. There's, you know, there's a good number of interesting prep arms, although there seem to be a lot in a lot of these recent drafts. The prep hitters, the top class of prep hitters are really pretty strong, but there isn't a guy who I think will be a top 20 prospect overall at the end of the season. So if you're looking for, you know, if you're looking for someone in the mold of, you know, like a Carlos Correa or Byron Buxton or even Royce Lewis from last year, I don't think or Joe Adell, I don't think you're gonna find that guy.
You had to sneak that in, didn't you?
Yeah, but the overall depth is strong, and that makes this draft, you know, we talk about how you position yourselves in dynasty drafts each year. For me, this is the kind of draft that you want multiple picks as opposed to high picks.
Fair enough. Yeah, I do like how you got the Joe Adell shot in that early. That's pretty good.
Just cruel. Twisting the knife.
So we'll talk about our 2017 draft in a little bit, but I think we should get right into it. George was kind enough to select the order in which we will be drafting this year. So it turns out that I have the first overall pick. Pretty excited about that after Brett just told us it doesn't matter. Brett has the second pick, and then Craig is third. And we will be doing a snake draft and six rounds. So for those of you math majors at home, that means we'll be covering 18 players and then pause a little bit at the end to talk about anybody who we missed. So drum roll, please, with the first overall selection in the 2018 Tino post-draft fantasy draft. To no one's surprise, I am taking Nick Madrigal, who was the fourth overall pick and in the actual draft and ended up with the White Sox. And Brett, I get your point about there not being, you know, perhaps an explosive elite talent in this draft. But without having a list in front of me of the top 20 Dynasty League prospects right now, I wouldn't think Madrigal would be terribly far off given the impact he can make with his legs and his relative proximity to the majors. Definitely a guy I view as a high average hitter and someone who can do some damage on the bases, and hopefully he'll be playing, you know, late 2019 at the most aggressive timetable, but certainly I think by mid-2020. So you're right, not the star to end all stars here, but definitely a player I'd feel very good about adding to my farm system.
Yeah, I'm a huge Madrigal fan, and to be fair, my comment before was about prep hitters. So I think Madrigal is a guy who could be in top 20 at the end of the year. But it's going to be top 20 based more on floor and ETA than on pure ceiling. Just because he's probably not that five category guy, even though the four categories he could provide are pretty damn good.
Brett, is there a gap for you with it? You know, is Madrigal the clear number one and then there's a gap, or, you know, is there someone else who you view sort of in the same tier as him? I don't know if you want to answer that in conjunction with your pick or independently. Ball is in your court.
And there's a little bit of a gap for me. Not a huge one, though. But I will jump into the guy who is who's right behind him. And he's another guy who's a college bat, who's more floor and ETA than ceiling, but the ceiling is still pretty strong. And that's Alec Baum, who's the third baseman drafted by the Phillies, third overall. You know, this is kind of your perfect combination of high floor, great environment, and a pretty strong upside. I think he basically, if everything goes reasonably well, he could be the guy that even the most fervent Michael Franco supporter thought Michael Franco was going to be. Clearly that hasn't worked out so well for the Phillies, but you know, you're talking about a guy that in Citizens Bank Park could challenge for 30 homers pretty easily and hit for, you know, a good average to boot, you know, maybe not a 300 guy, but certainly not someone who will be sort of in the 250, 260 range. I think he'll kind of split the difference and be more, you know, 280, 285-ish if the hit tool, comes around the way I think it will. Like Madrigal, I think he'll make a case to be in the majors in the second half of 2019, and you can't really beat solid ceiling with a pretty quick ETA.
Okay, this is a good spot for me because this is a draft where you want one of the first two picks, fantasy wise. Am I wrong, Brett?
Depends how much you like.
I don't like Travis Swaggerty that much, so.
Yeah, well, that it depends how much you like him or the other college bat that some people like, which I know I don't like similarly the way you don't like.
Yeah, so I'm going to go somewhat off board. I mean, it's not too far down if we're looking at your list of the top 40 dynasty prospects out of the draft, but since I obviously loved Joe Adell last year and didn't go for him early and that let Brett land him. I'm going to go for the Angels' uber toolsy draft pick this year and go with Jordan Adams. He is a two-sport prospect. He was, football and baseball. He's a ridiculous athlete, huge amount of speed. There could be some power there, but it's not, that's not really the attraction here. It's enough to not get the bat knocked out of your hand. But the attraction here is the speed with the chance to hit. And given the success that they've had with Joe Adele, just in terms of another questionable hit tool guy, even though obviously he was well known as a hitter and as a prospect entering the draft, there were some questions just because of the level of competition he faced. What they've gotten out of him, obviously these guys are not the same. But, they've done pretty well with their extremely athletic, toolsy picks. And that extends to Brandon Marsh as well. And you could even go as far as Jermai Jones, who I know is not having the greatest year so far, but has been fighting an injury. There's at least a little bit of a track record there. So I'm going to go with Adams third. Do you think this is Brett, I just want to know your opinion on that as a selection over a guy like Swaggerty or the other guy I'm assuming was India, neither of whom I like very
much. I mean, I came really close to putting Adams at three on my list. Okay. So I think it's I do think it kind of just comes down to preference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. And I don't know. Well, whoever takes Swaggerty, we'll talk about him. He's just not exactly my cup of tea, so I think people can deduce I'm not going to take him at fourth. I'm going to go a little more off board. I'm going to suck up to our former Tino host and take Nolan Gorman, the Cardinals' first-round pick, who was signed by Mal Rubio. Shout out to Mal. We'll get some bells for now, right, technically?
She's passed on.
Yeah. So, George, we'll get some bells for now there. I wrote Matt Ruby on the draft. That's not it. Gorman is a power guy through and through. I mean, I think there's a chance he'll hit a little bit, but you're not – just like with Adams, you're not in it for the power. With Gorman, you're not in it for the speed. He's a really, 70 raw strength. He's got loft in his swing already. He knows how to get, extend and get the head of the bat on the ball. This is all about power. He's got a chance to stick at third base. And so I just think pairing him in terms of this draft, going with Adams for speed and then Gorman for power, makes sense. I think it's going to take a little bit of time, but it's a potential middle of the order bat. So I think this is kind of a weird, I don't know. We'll see. I just don't think there's a lot of middle tier type guys, like guys who will kind of contribute all over but won't dominate anywhere. And Brett, you can correct me on that if I'm wrong, but I want to go for someone who could actually make an impact in a category here.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Gorman has the carrying tool and his power, and a lot of these guys, and this is kind of what I alluded to at the beginning when we were talking about the class, is a lot of these guys are more solid contributor than impact player. I think there's one player that has impact potential, but I think there's that player is risky enough. I don't think we'll talk about them for a couple rounds, but mm-hmm. I guess that will lead into my pick, and I will take Travis Swaggerty. I think the overall kind of sum of his parts from a fantasy perspective is going to I think it could lead him to be a solid outfield two. I think he's got enough speed for 25-ish steals, and I think he's got enough pop for 20 homers. Whether he can get to both is certainly a question. I think it's probably unlikely he becomes an actual 20-25 guy. That would make him a better than an outfield too. With a half decent batting average. I think he'll be better in on base leagues than in batting average leagues, but I still think he's got enough hit tool to hit 260 to 270. At least not to hurt you. You know, and if he is a leadoff guy, it should lead to a fair number of runs, especially if he does do a good job of getting on base. So, I like Swaggerty. I think I like Swaggerty more than most, but just because he's ranked third on my list doesn't mean I love him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's fair.
Ben, back to you for the turn.
Well, you're both going to hate this, but I don't know. I think I do have to go Jonathan India here. I get the concerns, but I think given how much he's raised his stock over the past year and the fact that he could be sort of an all-around contributor and hopefully won't take forever to get to the majors, I don't know. I think I dislike him less than most of the other names left on the list at this point. So I get that it won't be a popular pick among you two. And because of that, I almost didn't take him just because I thought he might make it back to me, because I know neither of you are huge Jonathan India guys. But at this point, I'm comfortable rolling the dice. I mean, I know we don't think he is as good as Nick Senzel, but is it fair to say we're hoping that the profile ends up being like 85% of what Nick Senzel is right now?
Yeah, I was going to bring him up. I mean, because I was going to say, I recall not being a huge fan of Senzel's fantasy profile out of the draft, kind of the same way. I think the Reds are a good organization if he stays there for him to end up with, if he ends up at, in Great American Ballpark. And the other thing is, like, I've admitted this before, I'm relatively slow to kind of change my view of people's profiles. And India was a guy who wasn't that good until this season. And then he flat out smashed the SEC. And I honestly don't really know how to weight that. I mean, the SEC is incredible. And I don't know if a guy's had as good a draft year in that, you know, in that capacity since like Benintendi, and obviously Benintendi's been fantastic. So it's meaningful that he hit for the kind of power he did in the SEC, but like he also had never shown that before. And Brett, I just don't know what to make of that, which is kind of why I'm staying away.
Yeah, I think this reminds me, they're totally different players. But the Jonathan India thing reminds me of Andrew Benintendi in the fact that, you know, it was a guy without, you know, that sort of without a, you know, a noticeable fantasy profile going into the spring of the draft, and he just kept hitting. And, you know, I probably wrote off Benintendi a little bit more than I should have when he came out, despite the performance. And that's why I'm hesitant to be too down on India, but I think given the park and the performance, you know, I think there's a good chance that he will be a solid fantasy contributor. I don't think he's going to be a star. But I also don't think he's going to be like Dustin Ackley.
Craig and Brett, would either of you say that the way India improved this year is akin to Andrew Benintendi's way he broke out, or am I off base?
You know how I know Brett doesn't listen when I talk?
how do you know that?
Because I freaking said Benintendi. I said the same thing.
I have my daughter texting me from the other room telling me to pick Matt Harvey. This is adorable. I don't know how to break it to her that I can't.
Does she know that Matt Harvey's been a big velocity gainer this year? Is that what tipped her off?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. No, it's fine. I think people will make the connection now, even though India and Benintendi are in no way alike.
Pretty much the same player.
Yeah, basically the same guy.
All right, so for my other pick on the bend, you know, Brett, I made a joking reference when we started the podcast about how, you know, I'm the expert here and you're following along. Obviously, the exact opposite is true, but I, you know, I am looking at your too early top 40, and I like that you have Trevor Larnach so aggressively ranked. He was a guy who I did sort of like from a fantasy profile point of view, just in terms of reading about all the prospects a few weeks ago when they were drafted. Certainly not going to say I'm someone who's watched a ton of tape on these guys or really knows their strengths. But obviously, as a prep bat who has the potential for a solid average and good power, I guess between India and Larnach, it's basically an exercise in valuing floor over ceiling, since that's where the strength of this draft tends to lie. So before we start getting to the point where we have to gamble on uber risky, you know, prep hitters or start getting into arms, I think I'll take another bat who, at the very least, I consider a safe bet to reach the majors in Larnach.
All right. Well, I was going to take Larnach if you didn't, so I'm going to take I really like Larnach's bat. I think he's he's one of those guys who I think the profile is a much better fantasy profile than a real life profile, because he's, you know, kind of a meh corner outfielder at best, but I think he can hit for power and average, and I like his ability to tap into the power that he has. But I'm going to take Casey Mize, who is the number one pick in the draft. I think there's enough ceiling here to take at this point. To make a comparison, thinking of Mize in terms of how he's compared to recent top college arms, I like Mize a little bit more than I like Kyle Wright coming out of the draft last year. So I think we're still looking at a guy who should be, you know, as long as he shows up in pro ball the way he showed up in the spring, I think he's probably going to be a top 50 dynasty prospect at the end of the year. But, you know, I don't think there is ace upside here, which pushes him, you know, which is the reason why he's not in the top five on my list, even though the top of the draft isn't as strong as we're used to seeing. Greg, were you going to, before you say who your picks are, would you have taken Mize as one of your picks if I didn't?
Yeah, I would have. I mean, I think everything you said makes sense. I don't think the top of the rotation upside is there, but I do think he's going to miss plenty of bats with that splitter. And so I think, given the safety and his ability to miss bats, I think he should be a fast mover, as you described in your top 40, and the ability to miss bats with that out pitch, then, you know, I don't think there's a way he should fall past kind of where we have him. Right now. So if he did, I would have happily claimed him. I think it gets really weird again at this point. I don't know if you agree, Brett, but it's a weird spot. I was definitely planning on taking Mize. You know, I'm just going to keep going risky picks. Why the hell not? I'm going to take Kyler Murray. And
ah, damn it.
Yeah, I don't know if this is a great spot for him or not, but he probably should fall back to where Ben is, and he has a reason to be upset about it. But Murray, I hate the fact that he's going back to play football. Obviously, if that's what he wants to do, that's great for him. But in terms of drafting him for fantasy, and really just in terms of the A's giving him $5 million guaranteed, he's going back to play football, and he's playing football at Oklahoma. So he's facing really good defenses throughout the year, stuff like that. I'd be worried about the injuries that he could sustain on the field. That said, I've talked to a guy who saw him out of high school, and the scouting reports on him are absolutely nuts. It's like plus raw power, and he's one of the fastest guys that the scout I was talking to has ever seen. I mean, that's like to have that type of power and then also be able to run sub 4 times down to first is insane. And that's something Murray was able to show out of high school. Now, obviously, you know, he's been playing in college, and he's going to be a quarterback. I think his body has probably filled out a little bit. I don't know if he still has that same type of speed, but even if he's lost a little bit of it, I think it's worth the. I think he's kind of the last guy with premium upside that we're talking about. The only problem is, in terms of kind of risk profile, is not only is he going to play football and you have the injury risk, but he's not going to be playing, you know, this summer, or he's not going to be focusing on baseball. So his development time, his lead time to impact is going to be a while. And given that he's missed or not focused on baseball the entire way since high school, it's not ideal in that respect. And he's kind of behind the ball already on that. Okay, so for my next pick, I'm going to take an arm. I believe I told Brett, I think, should have moved up in the first place on his list. So I'm going to take Carter Stewart, who was the 8th overall pick for the Braves. As Brett points out, he was an extreme spin rate guy. I mean, I've heard he posts like higher spin rate on his curveball than regularly gets recorded in the majors, like higher than Seth Lugo's spin rates. Which obviously are, I believe he had the highest one, as far as I know, but it's not just the spin rate stuff. I mean, it's not just the data. Like he has a mid-90s fastball. The curveball is really good. It just doesn't just spin really, hard. And as Brett points out, the Braves have a bevy of arms that we've seen. I mean, again, they traded for Tukey, who seemed like he had stalled out for a little bit, and that's another guy with a fastball-curveball combination that is really putting things together finally. I think, you know, going to a system like that, you can have a little more trust. I mean, it's still a prep arm, but, you know, they've seemed to develop arms pretty well, and I'm willing to take the chance there.
Yeah, I think Stewart is a solid pick if you're looking for just, you know, kind of raw upside. I will actually take a pick that I think has a fair amount of upside as well on the way back. And I'm going to take Connor Scott, the prep outfielder the Marlins took.
Noels.
Pick.
I don't know if you noticed.
What was that?
Noels.
Yeah, definitely Noels. It fits in with the theme.
Yeah.
He's going to get some unnecessary comps to Kyle Tucker just because he went to the same high school as him. But the profile's actually not super dissimilar. It's just not quite, I wouldn't expect him to be that good.
Both of them have two first names too.
Also true. I wonder if it just grows on trees down there in Florida. Scott is more of an average and speed prep guy as opposed to a kind of a freak athlete with, you know, crazy raw power. But I could see him getting, you know, I could see him pretty easily getting up into the mid teens in power and augmenting it with 30-ish steals. Obviously with the potential, if you wanted to, he probably could steal a little bit more than that, but I think the overall profile is really strong. I think the speed can carry it, and I think the average can add to it. And the Marlins have done a pretty good job with their drafting in this regime, but the people who are actually making baseball decisions, not the people who are making the headlines. So Ben, it's back to you for two picks.
Well, I'm set. It was a gamble with Kyler Murray. I was hoping he would get back to me, even though, I mean, he's the type of guy who, you know, in a few minutes, we're going to look back at our draft from last year. And if we were flash forwarding a year, it would look terrible where I was going to take him. And it will look terrible where Greg takes him because he won't really have done anything baseball wise. But if you zoom out, I think it could be a good pick long term. I don't know how I could possibly go against my better nature and not take Seth Beer at this point. I know that he is probably a DH, but also if you tell me that the Astros are putting some trust in a polished college hitter with a track record, I can't really think of a better organization to trust fall into than that. So Yes, not thrilled about the potential for utility only, but also a guy who could, you know, potentially be in that lineup on an everyday basis in the first half of 2020, and the power potential is huge. And then on the flip side, I will go in a completely opposite direction and go a little bit off of your board, Brett, and go with Bryce Turang, who I think, you know, maybe we've overcorrected a little bit given all the hype that was coming out of him or coming, all the hype that was associated with him after his junior year. I mean, he fell to pick 21 for a reason, but at the same time, you know, the speed is still there. People do think he'll stick in the infield, and I like the overall profile of guy who at one point had enough tools that we thought might go, you know, 1-1 or at least in the top five. So once again, want to reiterate, I have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about. But with that being said, I'm very confident.
I like the pick, Ben, because it sounds like a model of a car.
Yeah, the 2019 Bryce Turang finally comes with all-wheel drive, which was really the last thing that was holding it back. And now that feature is available, I think it's going to compete with some of the German models for sure.
Yeah, and I like that they offer it in a sports mode.
Obviously. Yeah, that's you know, they were a little behind on that, and the infotainment system is better now too. Yeah.
So I'm going to take a guy who also is a who also is speed based and just a huge toolsy guy, and go with the Xavier Edwards shortstop the Padres took in the competitive balance round, the first competitive balance round. He's he is the other guy along with Jordan Adams out of the prep ranks that, you know, you could put 8 speed on. Edwards is more of the traditional 8 speed guy. He doesn't have I don't think he's got the pop that Adams has, but I think, you know, he can be a 50 steal guy and maybe approach 10 homers if he taps into the power and the hit tool comes through. But, you know, I think you're looking at more, you know, just more of a true speed-based outfield too, which is you know, still obviously quite valuable because of the dearth of speed in today's game. But you know, especially if he can stick at shortstop, that'll be a nice boon for him. But yeah, I like Edwards.
Yeah, I like Edwards too, and he is who I would have been taking had you not.
Some people call him the modern Bryce Turang.
Yeah, sure. I was trying to figure out like a way to make that into a car joke, and it wasn't happening.
It stalled out.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. I'd like to reverse out of this.
Yeah, well, shift gears. Make your next pick.
So I will admit I'm not particularly excited about this pick, but I think it probably makes the most sense given where I am, and I'm going to take Jared Kelenic, who will probably die of typhoid given that the Mets drafted him. There's nothing like super exciting from a fantasy standpoint. I mean, you know, Brett, I think the rose-colored glasses that you mentioned in the in the write-up is 300 with potentially 2020. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but it would be a surprise like if all of that happened, I guess, at the same time. But like there's a chance he could hit 300. There's a chance he could hit for, you know, 20 homers and steal 20 bases. But, you know, probably not that type of guy all at once.
I think that's right.
Just because of what it means for, like, you know, how he's changing his swing or whatever. I mean, I think the one way it's tempting to make a comparison that this could work out really well is, and it didn't look like it would necessarily be a good comp until this year, but, you know, the last cold weather high school bat they spent a first round pick on was Brandon Nimmo, right?
Yeah.
And he was a sum of his parts type guy also. And, you know, now he's like, I don't know, top 4 in the league in slugging or something like that. I don't expect that to last for Nimmo, but also, you know, just shows that sometimes these guys take a little bit to mature and a while to put it together. So, again, I'm not, like, super pumped to get him, but it's also, you know, this is a 15th pick in our draft, and I think he's a really talented guy. I don't mean this from a non-fantasy perspective, but from a fantasy perspective, it's a little more of a muted output. Is that fair, Brett?
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, if it works, then sure, maybe he is eventually something like Nimmo. If it doesn't, I mean, the cold weather sum of his parts bat I always go back to is Nick Plummer, and you know, yeah, that one didn't work out so well.
Yeah, so that's a fair point. I'm left with a choice between bats I don't love and arms I don't love. So that's a good situation to be in.
Very good situation. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's an obvious pick, but the honest truth is I don't know a ton about him. And so I'm gonna just go for another power bat and take Tristan Casas.
No, he's the only guy I knew how to talk about.
Oh, wait, is this the last pick, Ben? I'll leave him for you. I have an off-board pick I wanted to make. I didn't realize it was the last round. I want to make an off-board pick just to make a point about a guy that I really like. And it's needless, and there are definitely bats you should take before this guy. But if you're going to look at a guy outside of Brett's even top 60 or really outside the first round, I really like Jeremiah Jackson. And I'm gonna take him because I want to revisit this in a year and see what it looks like. He was the Angels second rounder, so now I've taken two Angels draft picks. But I said this during the draft. I really liked their draft. He's a bat first middle infielder, potentially an impact bat, I think. And he's got a lot of power. And so I like that profile out of the middle infield. I know, Brett, he wasn't on your list. Do you have any thoughts on him in general? Or
he was in my honorable mentions.
He's on mentions, yeah, but you didn't write him up, I should say.
Yeah. I didn't. I mean, I could have easily put him in the last couple of picks in there. I think you're right. I think it's, you know, I think there's a long way for him to go, but there is definitely upside in the bat.
Yeah. So that's more of a statement pick. But I wanted to throw his name down. So.
Okay. I guess that means this is my last pick too, right?
It is. Now you can break. You can break Ben's pick.
Okay. I'm gonna take Noah Naylor then. I think one of two things is going to happen here. I think he is. I think there's a decent chance that he can stick behind the plate. If he does, I don't think the bat will develop quite in the same way. But if he moves off the plate and ends up playing third base, I think he could have similar offensive impact to Alec Baum if it all comes together in the end. I think the hit tool is there, the power potential is there, at least to, you know, get to 25-ish homers. But I think he's the average is where I think he's probably going to make the most impact. I think he could hit 280. I think he could push 300 if he can really develop right. But I don't really. This is one of the few situations where I actually like him better if they move him out from behind the plate.
I've heard as a catcher, he gets a little stabby.
Yeah. Mm. Well, let's hope he learns some lessons from his big brother. I do like him better if they move him out from behind the plate, but I'll still be interested if he's a catcher.
All right. Well, I'm going to round out the draft by taking Owen Schartz,
please donate so we can buy Holly that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're still like, well, I'm assuming what?
17 donations.
So if the three of us put $5 in each, which is fair, then I think we're probably only about $10 away, given the other donations we've had. Yeah. So come on, we know there are, you know, at least five of you can afford a $2 donation, and we'll get Holly the Sharts 2 jersey she so badly deserves. I will take Casas with the last pick, and it's definitely not because he's the only guy left who I know anything about. I'm not very confident in him playing third base long term, but You know, Brett, you say he might not even be a 260 hitter in your write-up. I think that might be, you know, obviously I'm reading sort of Red Sox-focused stories about him, but I think that might be a tiny bit pessimistic, and everybody is really big on the power. So, ironically, he could end up looking kind of like what Travis Shaw became, which is not at all what we thought Travis Shaw would be when he was a prospect, but you know, very much that sort of 270s, 260s hitter with 30 homers who hopefully at least has eligibility at both corner spots. And I think that does sort of speak to the depth of this class, because I feel like a guy like Casas would have been more interesting last year at this time.
Yeah.
Now, Brett, just to ask a question, I noticed you went out of order for your top 42 take Noah Naylor. You bypassed Joey Bart and you bypassed Jordan Groshans. Are you shifting? Obviously, you know, these are snapshots, so if you redid it, would you have Naylor higher than them, or was there just something about kind of the way this shook out that made you bypass them?
I might have Naylor higher now than when I wrote it. You know, obviously we say the whole snapshot thing, but as these guys enter pro ball, and as we still kind of collect information on them, you know, the information is changing slightly more rapidly than.
No, I mean, if honestly, like if this had been done draft night, I would not have taken Jordan Adams where I did, but I've kind of liked what I've heard so far and what people are saying. So, you know, it definitely changes, even if they're not in pro ball yet. You know what I mean?
Yep. It definitely does. And it's going to, you know, I'm going to have my top 50 in January, and it's going to look a lot different than this.
Yeah.
So we'll keep talking about it and adjusting it on the fly. But should we talk about a couple of interesting guys we didn't get to in here?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I don't really want to talk about Joey Bart. I don't think he's all that interesting for fantasy.
Can you do a short version? It's like maybe Mike Zunino?
Yeah, that's basically what I wrote.
Yeah.
I think slightly less power, slightly more average, but basically.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I'll kind of dive through a couple of these guys as I scroll down the list. Groshans is interesting just because he could be a power hitting third baseman, but he's got a longer way to go to get there than someone like Nolan Gorman. Mm-hmm. I think you get into a whole bunch of arms. There's fun and risky arms, and there's kind of safe arms that kind of bore you a little bit. Really, the only one who's more on the boring side of this group is Brady Singer, but he's probably the most likely pitcher other than Casey Mize to be on someone's fantasy team in 3 years. You might not want to hold on to him long term, but he probably will be there. You know, you've got a couple of I want to talk about two guys who I had at 23 and 24 while we're talking about arms, and talk about Mason Denenberg and Ethan Henkins. Neither of these guys, and rightfully so, were in the draft that we just did. But man, if either of them are actually fully healthy, then either one could be the best prep pitcher in this draft class.
Mm-hmm.
The Nationals clearly have a very good history of taking guys like this and finding gems and using kind of injuries a little bit of an arbitrage. You know, we forget they did this with this guy, but you know, we talk about all the excitement around Jesus Luzardo, but that was a Nationals pick.
Absolutely. Had
Tommy John, and you know what, they're really fucking good at this. You know, Henkins is a guy who was talked about possibly going 1-1 heading into the spring, had an injury in the spring. His velocity was kind of all over the place. But if he can find that premium velocity again, he could absolutely fly up this list.
Yeah, I mean, he's someone who, if he was actually fully healthy, I think probably is the best pitcher in this draft, including for fantasy. But, you know, as you mentioned, he had health issues. It's a shoulder issue too, not an elbow. And when he came back, the velocity was all over the place. It was mostly down. And that's pretty concerning, unfortunately.
Yeah. He's got a little bit more upside than Denneberg, but Denneberg showed a little bit better in his final couple of appearances before the draft.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean we'll see where that goes. Greg, is there anyone you wanted to touch on that we haven't talked about?
Joe Gray is a guy I kind of scoped out early as like my type of guy who's the raw toolsy outfield type, extremely athletic. He was kind of worse with the bat. This was like in the middle of the season or towards the beginning of the college season. He was kind of worse with the bat than even people expected, and it was already questionable. But he's got enough bat speed and power and athleticism to be really intriguing if the Brewers can find a way to get him to make contact. And you know, I think the Royals' second pick, Jackson Kowar, is like a guy who's upper 90s and can really, you know, if he can develop his secondaries, that's a pick I might end up liking more than Brady Singer. Honestly, I'm not the biggest Singer fan in terms of fantasy profile. So those are two names that stuck out for me.
Yeah. There are a lot of other prep arms that could be interesting, and there's really no need to go into all of them. Just a couple of guys I want to point out on the prep side that I think could be interesting. I have Alec Thomas, the second rounder.
Oh yeah, I like that. I like him a lot too.
I have him ranked relatively aggressively.
And I think it's a good one.
It's a good profile, and you know, Thomas kind of feels like one of those guys who gets overlooked because he's a toolsy prep outfielder, but he's not the toolsiest prep outfielder. But I think that I think there's a good chance he can turn into a really solid outfielder here. I really like that pick by the Diamondbacks. Going down a little bit further, it's unclear whether he's going to sign, but Mike Ciani, the outfielder the Reds took in the fourth round, is way better than a fourth rounder on talent. And we'll see if he does sign, but he's definitely a central five category guy. I adore Grayson Rodriguez on talent, and I hate the fact that he was drafted by the Orioles. I literally moved him down 15 spots on this list after he was drafted by the Orioles. He's lower on my list than if he was drafted by the Rockies. That is how little I trust pitchers in the Orioles system. Yeah. And we'll kind of cut it this. I just want to mention one more hitter that I don't think people are really talking about, but could be kind of a interesting, fast-moving guy, more for deeper leagues because I don't think he's got huge upside. But Jameson Hanna, the second-round pick of the A's, it's kind of a small college guy, a little raw for a college bat, but he's got five category potential. He's got speed, and he's definitely someone to watch as he gets into pro ball.
I think Ben knows a lot about Jameson Hanna.
He does.
The one who got away, the third one who got away, technically.
Are you expecting much in the way of hits out of Enya?
Welcome back to episode 113 of There Is No Offseason. We hope you use that break to fill out your own rounds 7 through 10 of the 2018 MLB Draft post-draft. So right before we get to Madden or Mad Online, which I believe is going to be the ever-rare only Mad Online portion of the podcast, no mixing this time.
It was where it was heading the whole time.
Yeah, pretty much. We very briefly wanted to go over our 2017 post-draft, not really to come away with any large conclusions, but just to show, I think just to illustrate how quickly these things can change. Because if my memory serves, we did the post-draft draft like 4 or 5 days after the draft last year. So really, really raw, not a lot of information going on. So last year, the draft order was Craig and then Ben and then Brett. And we'll do I'll talk about the first two rounds first. So Craig took Keston Hura up first. I don't want to talk about who I took second. It was Brendan McKay. Brett took Royce Lewis and then Mackenzie Gore on the turn. I took Hunter Green and then Craig took Jaron Kendall. So
that's bad.
That is, it's well, it's not as bad as taking Brendan McKay second overall. So we all live and learn.
But at least McKay's been good. He's been good as a pitcher.
And if you know anything about me, it's that I love taking dynasty pitching prospects early.
Definitely.
Brett, any thoughts about those first six taken, or just want to use this as an illustration of how things can change, or?
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, I don't think anything. I mean, I know there are picks I assume we would like to have back, but I don't think there's anything really crazy in here. You know, the Kendall pick was always going to be risky, but I mean,
I'm going to disagree. That's not only crazy; it might not be crazy. It's stupid. It was bad. It's a bad pick.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, but...
But I am. I think we can say
that. You can say that. The Hunter Green pick, I think, I there's a long time for that to work out. So I wouldn't...
I still kind of like Hunter Green. I know I'm in the minority on this podcast, but I'm not as down on Green.
Yeah, I didn't love Green a ton at draft time, but I don't feel like I like him a ton worse now.
I don't think he's really changed as I don't think if you shouldn't really have changed your opinion on him at this point.
No.
Okay. So round three is
Keston Hura is still awesome.
Very much so.
He is very awesome.
Round three is not going to make us feel much better, but round four will. So to lead off round three, Craig took Austin Beck, Ben took Adam Haseley, and Brett took Kyle Wright. But then things get better. Brett took Joe Adell with the first overall pick in the fifth round. I took Bubba Thompson, and Craig took Helio Ramos. So we went for a trio of uber toolsy outfielders in the fourth round, and that's looking pretty good at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I will say on the back front, I've kind of backed off of him, of liking him, but to my surprise, he's hitting.
He's been pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, the power isn't there right now, but as a 19-year-old hitting .299 in low A, you know, full season ball for a guy that was a bag of tools without putting much together. Yeah, I'm surprised. That looks okay for me because I picked him, but I also badmouthed him as a pick for months after that. So
right.
Confusing.
Very.
And we won't belabor the point, but just to give you an idea of rounding out the draft, what you might be able to expect from our last six picks this year. Round five, we went Nick Prado, Lorgan Warmoth, and Pavin Smith. In six, Brett went Evan White. Then I took Shane Baz, and Craig took Tristan Lutz. So, you know, probably won't be as stark a year from now because, as we've talked about, the 2018 class is a little bit deeper. But, you know, out of the six final picks we did this year, I would maybe only expect one or two to be held in particularly high esteem in 12 months.
Yeah, I stared at that for 30 seconds, and I couldn't figure out which White I took.
Oh, it's Evan, the first round.
It's Evan White, yeah.
I forgot it when Ben said it, and I just had no idea. That's how much Evan means to me now.
Did we talk about which Smith this was? Which Smith Pavin. Is this?
It's Pavin.
Oh, Brett.
Well, Brett had like the ultimate dichotomy draft, right? Because he took Royce Lewis, Mackenzie Gore, and Joe Adell. Yeah. And Kyle Wright's fine, but then he took Pavin Smith and Evan White.
Yeah, I'm proud of you for saying Pavin, because in my head it's Pavin, and I think you're right.
Oh, I use both.
Okay.
On this podcast. I just, yeah.
Putting the baby.
Yeah, next time it's Paveen. All right, so we'll go to Madden or Mad Online, or as this edition will be known, only Mad Online. Craig, you've been leaving us all in suspense, so I wanna know what you are Mad Online about.
I'm Mad Online about intellectual property, Ben.
Oh, excellent.
I mean, I will admit. I did some research into this. It's not really something that's either trademark or copyright. But all I'm going to say is, if someone came up with something and you're going to create a product or service off of it, you should at least, you know, talk to them or throw them a free t-shirt. Is that so hard? Is that so hard? When someone creates a phenomenal nickname that both the league and the team and Baseball Reference all endorse. Is that so hard?
I feel for you, Craig.
I have done zero good things in my life up to this point. I finally do something that people are... Do you understand that I've spent like 7 years on Twitter with no one being happy about anything I've done? And now, finally, year of our Lord 2018, everything is shit in the world. I come up with one good thing, and someone else is like, that's mine now.
What's amazing is the only other semi-good thing you've done on Twitter is the Billy Bean Max Scherzer tweet. Yes. And it's gotten popular enough that people like use its form, but also without attribution.
Yes.
Like within our circle of baseball Twitter, it's the same way that we recycle like drill tweets or like the PF Chang tweet.
Yeah.
But once again, something that you have done well gets just no credit given back to you.
and fucking, you know what? The worst part of this, credit given to Chris Swick of all people, Chris goddamn Swick. Are
so
you kidding
good.
Me? Are you kidding?
Whose nickname for Juan Soto probably would have been like, look, it's Juan Soto.
very upsetting. Very upsetting. So mildly legitimately mad online about that.
I think you have beef. I think you have legit beef.
Yeah, it is appropriate to be mad online about this.
Thank you, Ben. I know I'm in accordance with your topic, so I want to hear what you have to say here.
I'm like, listen, Mike Trout is a phenomenal baseball player, and I think that, you know, when we take a step back, we all realize that we are in the presence of greatness when we watch him play. But holy shit, I am so tired of having that greatness shoved so far up my asshole it comes out my mouth every single time I log on Twitter or go on MLB.com or open my email and I'm getting like fucking e-blasts from various sports writing websites about it. I don't care, and I'm very tired of being yelled at for not appreciating Mike Trout enough to the point where I'm starting to hate Mike Trout. And it's not Mike Trout's fault at all. He's too fucking boring to give a shit what anybody says about him one way or the other. He's just standing in center field and looking at cumulus clouds. But I really fucking hate going on Twitter and every 5 seconds, you know, some poor old grandpa is like, oh, like I'm on my deathbed, but my favorite player was Harmon Killebrew. And some fucking asshole Fangraph commenter like ats him and he's like, well, actually, Harmon Killebrew had less war than Mike Trout by Mike Trout's age 23 season. And it's like, no one fucking cares. War is a made up stat anyway. So I'm very, very over this entire period. Mike Trout is great, but I really hope he fucking goes on like the 10 day DL with a hamstring pull just so everybody shuts the fuck up for 10 minutes.
He actually has a sprained finger.
So no, I take it back. I hope he's healthy. Shit.
he's DHing. He's not playing the field. He's
oh,
he's
good.
Pretty
well, that'll, you know, that'll hurt his war. So now he's probably a bottom 90 player.
Yeah, this is going to be a recurring one, but since we're like slightly on the topic, can we just stop using war in June? Can we stop? Just stop it. Everybody stop it. I know some of you are thinking, oh, but actually, like, it's a good one. No, stop it. I don't care if Mike Trout has as much more by now that he did all of last season because he missed some games last season. I don't give a shit. Stop using June Moore. That's just, your bonus, Matt, online. Stop it.
Also,
just fucking stop.
I'm not against the entire concept of war, but war isn't even precise enough to be exact when you're comparing two players who are playing right now. Fucking like cross-generational war, just throw it right out the fucking window. And it's nowhere near precise enough to compare the performance of someone who played in like 19 fucking 30 to Mike Trout. We are not there yet.
But it was in part developed to be a cross-era comparison.
But it doesn't work then.
Okay, well, I'm not going to get into that. I'm just saying.
I am aware, but okay. Not a fan. Matt Online. Right. Shouldn't be employed by Baseball Prospectus, probably.
We used warp. Thank you.
Like DRA, big DRA guy. I think that's a great stat.
I didn't know we're having Bill James on this podcast. Thanks, Ben.
All right, I'm gonna go into my topic, and I will keep this very brief. It is also about the Angels, but it is not about Mike Trout. You close your eyes and you envision, you know, Noah Syndergaard with his beautiful long hair, and it works because of his very chiseled and attractive face. The face is helpful. Jacob deGrom has a good face. If you are going to have long hair in baseball, you need to have an appropriate face. John Lamb does not have the appropriate face. John Lamb doesn't look like a cool baseball player with long hair. He looks like your friendly neighborhood meth dealer. And it's a really bad look. And I'm looking at a picture of him, and it's really bothering me.
I would take this time to bring up possibly one of the only other good tweets I've had, which is a picture of John Lamb when he was with the Reds. And I just said, John Lamb has lived several lives and ain't none of them been easy. that is the face he has.
That is absolutely the face that he has.
If John Lamb's face was the face of an actual lamb, it would be vastly improved, at least from the picture Craig is showing us.
Yeah, he's also, there's also a necessary tilt going on, which just looks really strange because of who John Lamb is. I don't know whether it's because his hair is just not even and he can't put on a hat the right way.
It's premium dad hat. It's sitting very high atop his head.
Yeah. He's just going to start pulling shit out of the hat. And
Literally every picture of John Lamb I've ever seen, he looks sad. He's got sad eyes.
Yeah.
Well, he's aware of how things are going for John Lamb. He's a realist.
Who do you guys think has sadder eyes? Is it John Lamb or Enya?
Welcome back to episode 113 of Tino. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. You can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett on Twitter at BrettSayerBP. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in...
copyright denied.
Cold Steve.
Man.
You can find our producer, George, who apparently has somewhere to be tonight, at George Bissell. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thank you for listening, and have a good night.
George, it should be a new rule that when we're just having a bad show, you just fucking Enya us, like, even in the middle of a segment, just, like, from the top rope, just fucking Enya us directly into the sun.
Like the Sandman from Nighttime at the Apollo.
So amazing.
That was excellent.
Brett, I forget exactly how you phrased it. It was either, like, you need the face or a good face helps, but that should be the name of Craig's memoir.